Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of NatureNow at kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and my guest today is Bob Friel. Bob is with the SeaDoc Society, and he is one of those like creative, adventurous Renaissance people. He's a producer of a set of videos called Salish Sea Wild, a filmmaker, a writer, a naturalist, an adventurer, and so much more. So welcome, Bob.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here, Nan.
Well, before we get wild, let's hear this week's mystery sound. Well, that particular critter was named for a German surgeon and naturalist who was on board Vitus Bering's Great Nordic Expedition. This naturalist first described that critter and wrote about it in 1742. Now let's go on to our conversation with Bob. So back to Bob. I first learned about Bob from a conversation with Joe Gatos, also with the SeaDoc Society. Some listeners may remember that I first interviewed Joe on Nature Now in the spring of 2015 when his book, The Salish Sea, Jewel of the Pacific Northwest, was first published. And I interviewed him again in 2018 with the publication of Learning About the Salish Sea for Kids. I also need to tell you a bit about the SeaDoc Society. I've been a member for some time. Their offices are located on Orcas Island, and they're sponsored by UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. And I just truly love their tagline, which says, "People and Science, Healing the Salish Sea." And as a member of Team SeaDoc, Bob is a filmmaker, writer, naturalist, adventurer, and conceiver of Salish Sea Wild. I'd seen a few of the Salish Sea Wild videos, but I had no idea that there was this wonderful series of videos that explore this amazing place we call home, the places, the people, the wildlife. And it's also an adventure series that shows scientists working to better understand and to save the Salish Sea. So Bob, first tell me a bit about Salish Sea Wild. How was it conceived and what inspired you to create the series?
Yeah, well, I've had property on Orcas Island for almost 20 years and moved here full-time about 15 years ago. And I studied marine science. This is the eighth island I've lived on around the world. So I've always been a big diver, big into marine science, naturalist, so on and so forth. So when I moved out here, I was carrying my dive gear down a 100-foot cliff and diving off of the west side of Orcas. And not my specialty, but the places I've mainly lived have been tropical, subtropical coral reefs. So I knew all that wildlife. Here, you know, I'd known about the big charismatic species like the orcas and the giant Pacific octopus, but I was looking at things, you know, first thing I saw down here was a sunflower sea star, you know, 3 feet wide.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everything was just blew me away. And I just realized how little I knew. So I took the naturalist class over at the Whale Museum in Friday Harbor. And on one of those days, Joe Gatos came in and taught a class about mustelids, you know, mink and otters and things like that. He was just a really engaging guy and had a good sense of humor and things like that. And then I just, as happens out here on the island, you know, I think I saw him 3 times in the next week. We just ran into each other at trash dump in the grocery store and started chatting a little bit. He found out I was a diver and a photographer and a writer. And I think the first thing he called me up was, hey, I need a dive buddy for something. So we started diving together. And, you know, when I saw his job as a wildlife veterinarian out here in this environment, I had also part of my crazy career of doing all these different things. I'd worked in television for a while, and I'm looking at him and I'm looking at this area and we're doing dives, and it's just an amazing place. And he's got a really cool job. And I'm like, hey, this could be a television show. And he said, yeah. You know, I'm a professor at Davis.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go do something crazy like that. And, you know, I then started shooting for CDOC and writing for CDOC and editing and doing a bunch of things for them. And Joe and I kept diving together and spent a lot of time on boats. And probably every other time we've been together, I said, you know, we could really do a show. This is really, really amazing stuff out here. And it took me 10 years. And he finally said, yeah, let's go ahead and do it.
Okay, you wore him down. All right.
I wore him down. And it's, as you know, of CDOC, it's, you know, it's relatively a tiny little conservation, mm-hmm. but it punches well above its weight because of amazing donors and amazing staff. And Joe has worked so hard about it. And the show, kind of the same thing. It's kind of bailing wire and not much budget, but we think we punch above our weight and we get out there. And, you know, one of the coolest things is that, you know, like the books that CDOC Society has done, and Salish Sea Wild is a bit like bringing those books to life. And, you know, also because of a lot of the things that we work with in the science and conservation out here are endangered species. People,
right.
Like you know about the southern residents, you now really can't get close to the southern residents.
Mm-hmm.
You can't land on a lot of these islands where puffins are, or you can't do these things. But we're doing research, and I'm able to be there as part of the research team with a camera. So now you actually get to go and see what a veterinarian does, even with endangered species that you can't see up close. So.
You know, I've watched a number of the episodes and I'm truly inspired by the absolutely terrific videography, compelling narratives. There's a recent one on bald eagles that hooked me in the very beginning because it was the eagle doing a butterfly stroke in the water. Imagine that. There's lots of cool science and all the amazing facts and complexities of natural science. I actually learn something new every time I watch one. And of course, there's a spirit of adventure, and there are compelling messages about conservation, causes of issues, responsibilities. The series really just gives you the wonder of this place where we are so fortunate to live and to be charged with the responsibility to know, understand, to love, and protect. Well, Bob, I know the series includes a wide variety of programs, Diving with Stellar Sea Lions, The Salish Sea After Dark, Fishes of the Intertidal, Wild Salmon, and so on. What's the scope of the series, and how do you go about deciding on what you're going to film?
Yeah, well, I mean, you hit on a number of those things, and thank you for the kind words. I mean, what overall, I think there's 15 or 16 episodes now, and I think there's 5 or 6 that were done at 5 minutes. We have some that are longer. The Bald Eagle one that just came out a week or two ago. You know, we did some of those at 22 minutes to maybe prove to a network someday if we wanted mm-hmm. to go in a bigger version that Joe Gatos, who is the host and does the voiceover, that he can carry a show. Plus that we have so much to see out here. And if you look at them in total, you said the word complexity, and that's really, you know, kind of what we're talking about. It's such a complex ecosystem here. You know, of all the places that I've lived, the fact that, you know, we've got everything connected from the mountaintop down out to the Pacific Ocean, and everything mixes in here. And we've got so much depending upon the forests and the fresh water, you know, specifically the salmon, but everything else. So, you know, that's the overall goal is to, as we said in the Eagle episode, as just an example. So you bring the conservation message in, you know, everybody's pretty much aware that, you know, when I was a little kid, the eagles were, I think there were 200 nests pairs in the lower 48, and they were on their way to extinction. And then we did some relatively simple things, and we saved the eagles. Now there's over 300,000 in the lower 48 or in North America. But, the complexity of the ecosystem. What happens when you take, you know, we've got top-down forcings of predators, we have bottom-up forcings of forage animals and prey. And so what a great, we recovered the eagles, but what happens? We have these cascading things that happen in the ecosystem, because we also have, seabirds, that some of those populations aren't doing very well. And we've covered them in other episodes. And here, because the bald eagles are a major predator of seabirds, we have them being moved around the Salish Sea and being predated on more. So it's, you know, we love to, you know, remind people of the complexity. And there's a lot of things like, anything that's controversial, say talking about salmon or maybe recovering some of the habitat, or especially now with marine mammals like seals and sea lions. And there's a tendency for people to kind of have that, you know, elbow on the bar kind of attitude. It's like, well, seals are eating salmon, so let's kill the seals or let's get rid of the seals. Seals are bad. But, you know, what we're trying to show is, and there's a lot of examples you can that have happened, especially on land and all around the world. It's easier to see those effects on land, where humans have come in and said, well, we'll simply do predator control. And there's cascading effects that are unintended consequences that further mess up the ecosystem. So we're always trying to, you know, relate that kind of thing. There's really, unfortunately, no easy answers in conservation. Get rid of DDT and we stopped shooting them. There were hundreds of thousands.
Yeah,
of,
that was the easy quote-unquote answer with the bald eagle.
Exactly. Those were the easy ones. And that's, even while they were our national bird, the federal government, state governments, the state of Alaska, before it was a state, the territory of Alaska, they paid bounties and killed hundreds of thousands of, I mean, even though it was our national bird. So, and that did not, they were doing that as predator control because they thought they were taking healthy salmon, which they don't. They take spawned out salmon almost totally. And they thought they were killing sheep, you know, lambs and things like that. And it's, you know, so there's just interesting things and everything is very complex. So the whole series as a whole wants to show that complexity. But when you're telling a story, you can't put all of that in an episode. So, you know, our job, my job is to, you know, you asked about stories. So I think I have a list of, you know, we've done 15. Maybe that's a third of the way through my initial list. I do this forever because it's such a rich ecosystem. So my goal is to, you know, either come at it from a part of the ecosystem, like a kelp forest or grass beds, or especially from an animal point of view, like a, you know, a southern resident killer whale or a bald eagle or a stellar sea lion. And then within that, you know, we don't want to hammer people. I mean, you've been in conservation, so you know this, and there's a doom and gloom factor and all that. So the show has to be compelling. It has to kind of grab you. I was so thrilled that I got that shot of the eagle swimming. That's part of my job, is to, how do we grab people in the beginning? And I had that shot and I knew that would.
Well, as it said, you hooked me within a moment.
Well, that's great to know. Even though we cut away from it, I said, oh, I'll use this as a teaser. We'll show this eagle swimming, give a little misdirection. And then Joe did a great job in the voiceover saying, here is the eagle swimming through the hunting so seals.
Little fun
and then
with
stop it all. Right. Stop it and say, wait, that's not right. So yeah, so we'll take individual animals, individual places, and then tell the story there. And you just kind of focus it. And also try to bring in, you know, Joe's great, you know, we try to put as much humor in the show as possible and make any, you know, there's a lot of, we're always the discussion when we get off of a shoot is how much of that interesting footage did we have? Because the more interesting footage I have, the more science we can throw in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Bob, one of the things that really impressed me in the program on stellar sea lions was how non-intrusive and gentle the filming was. You respected them and waited for them to come to you rather than invading their space. Do you have a basic ethic that you follow when you're doing the filming? And so how do you go about producing these shows?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, throughout my career, I've spent a bunch of in television working as a crew member, you know, just a cameraman or an underwater cameraman, topside cameraman, audio or whatever. And on some of those with the nature shows, they make you sign a non-disclosure agreement at the beginning of that, because they'll bait animals up and things like that. And, you know, this is part of CDOC. So we're totally with CDOC's message. We're extremely careful about that. We're accurate on the science, that we follow all regulations. I mean, if we're not on a permit, then we won't go near any animal that you need. And the, you know, the Stellar Sea Lions are a very interesting case because they're a marine mammal. It's against regulations, against NOAA regulations, against DFO regulations. You can't go and intend, oh, there's a Stellar Sea Lion, I'll jump in the water with
right.
it. So we went up there to Hornby Island, Denman Island, during the herring spawn, which itself was fascinating because and I did a whole episode just on the herring spawn. But when you dive anywhere around there, because it's a huge meeting place for Stellar Sea Lions and California Sea Lions, but especially the Stellars. So that, as we described it in the show, that's what we were doing. We were just down there diving. We were looking at rockfish. We were looking at all kinds of other things. There's great visibility up there. It's beautiful. And the sea lions had to choose to come to us. So that is our ethic. In fact, there's quite a few things that we kind of miss, because that's how we anything that we do, anything that we shoot, if anybody watched it, you know, we'd still be above board, and it would be, again, fitting with all of our policies and our conservation policies.
Yeah. You know, Bob, I have the sense we could talk just for ages. And I do know that you've got some wonderful adventure stories. So if you're willing to come back, could you perhaps give us a teaser of a story?
Sure. Yeah. Let's see. Teasers. It's just been amazing. I mean, the wonderful thing about what I do and what I've been able to do throughout my career is you have these amazing experiences. I had always heard of giant Pacific octopus, and I had played with small little 1 and 2 pound octopus in Florida, in the Caribbean, and other places. So getting to, you know, actually touch, or again, reach out your hand and let it touch you with one that's bigger than me, that was pretty amazing. Lots of things from the Stellars. You know, we've had amazing experiences out there doing science to track the health of killer whales. Yeah, it's almost everything we've done, there's stories behind it.
Well, for listeners wanting to find the Salish Sea Wild videos, there are several places you can find them. Go to the internet and search for SalishSeaWild.org. And that's one word, Salish Sea Wild. You can also find a link to them on the Sea Doc Society website, which is seadocsociety.org, or you can simply go to YouTube and search for Salish Sea Wild.
Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. Just describe the episodes, and each new one that comes out will be featured on both of those home pages, or people can just go to YouTube and type in Salish Sea Wild.
Yeah, I found it that way too, yeah. Let's take a quick moment and listen to that mystery sound again.
That was a colony of Stellar sea lions. On land, sea lions, unlike true seals, can turn their hind flippers forward, backward. They can walk. They have articulated shoulder and hip joints, so that back flippers are more analogous to our legs. So if you see a marine mammal walking or climbing up on a rock, it's going to be not a seal, but a sea lion. And Stellars can climb and are actually sometimes found on rocks or cliff faces high above the water. And then when they swim, Stellar sea lions use their broad, long front flippers to propel themselves. And while at sea, you can sometimes see them holding up one or more flippers out of the water. It looks very strange, but that's their way of thermoregulating. So the flippers essentially are poorly insulated. They can absorb heat into the blood, and then that can transfer to the rest of their bodies. So that was a colony of Stellar sea lions. So that's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you've enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. Today's sound engineer and editor is Nora Petrich, and Nature Now airs here on KPTZ at 91.9 on Wednesdays and Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. and Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. And of course, podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening. Our ending music is Under the Sea. It's a Grammy, Academy, and Golden Globe Awards winning song from the 1989 Disney animated feature film, The Little Mermaid. It's performed here by the Disney Classics Magic Philharmonic Orchestra.
Dungeness River Nature Center is pleased to support KPTZ programming like Nature Now. In memory of Dee and Beverly Swearingen, who taught their children and grandchildren the love and stewardship of nature, Dungeness River Nature Center, teaching generations about nature on the Olympic Peninsula at Railroad Bridge Park in Squim. More at DungenessRiverCenter.org.